as well. Last Sunday, we talked about something of what could be an encumbrance. The Hebrew author in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1 says that as we run this race, we are to remove every encumbrance and that every sin that entangles us, we are to get rid of it as we run this great race of life and salvation. And that's what we've been doing the last couple of weeks. We're talking about things like last week we talked about the idolatry of technology. Whether our things like cell phones can become a god for us if they are addictive for us. And we looked into our hearts to see if there's a change that needs to be made. Well, this morning we want to talk about another thing that can be a encumbrance that can stand in our way. And it's what I call the religion of culture. And one of our main passages this morning is going to be from Genesis chapter 11. If we want to begin turning there, we're going to read that in just a second in Genesis chapter 11. But let me say to you that I've spent a lot of time thinking about this lesson and exactly how I want to present it. And I apologize if this is going to come out as kind of a history lesson. I don't mean it to be that way, but there is a method to my madness. There's a process that I want to go through to get to this point where we're going to talk about the religion of culture. And I think that word culture is such a big, powerful word today. A word that perhaps, and a concept perhaps, that we don't give enough attention to. And so as we talk about the religion of culture, we start by looking at the world. And even in those times that our world comes together and says we're going to be united, it appears to me that we still emphasize our differences as a world, as a people. The differences of a people that have come from one man. I think a lot of us like to watch the Olympics, especially maybe the opening ceremonies. And we know that in those opening ceremonies, there's this idea that we're all coming together as a united people. But even in that effort of unity, even in those opening ceremonies, there is this distinct difference. We come together as different nations. And a lot of these different nations wear some type of outfit that applies to their culture. But even if there is unity in the opening ceremonies, it pretty much stops with those. And then everything is about how different we are. Which nation wins the most medals? Which nation wins the most gold or silver? We allow a person to stand up above everyone else, and it is their national anthem, their only national anthem that gets played. But there are other serious, more serious things that show our division. There are conflicts and quarrels between nations and people that really emphasize how different we are. There are nations that rise up and say, listen, we want to show you how different we are and that we still can be powerful and more powerful than you. Case in point, something that happened that scared a lot of people recently, of this nuclear weapons with North Korea and the threats they've made. And we can look back at history and see there's a lot of these international conflicts, and battles and wars that really emphasize how different we are, though we've come from one man. Culture. Culture is one of those things that really emphasizes our division, our difference. We have what's called an American culture that many have kind of described this way. That American culture is apple pie, baseball, hot dogs, and Chevrolet. And I would imagine there's a lot of people in this world, on this planet, that say, that's just weird. But then we look at other cultures and we say, boy, they dress funny. Why do they wear those big sombrero hats? Well, it's their culture. And then there are some that we really kind of wonder about, and maybe it makes us a little bit scared. It's culture. I haven't seen anyone want to dress up like that in Halloween recently. Then there are others that raise a lot of questions, maybe this one as well. Why are they dressed this way? Why do they have certain markings on their head? To them it has meaning, to us it doesn't have any meaning. And sometimes some people will mock other cultures, and again it just emphasizes the difference. And then there are conflicts, there are tragedies, there are things that are done of violence that really not only expose the difference of us as a culture, as a people, but can get very scary. Especially since 9/11. Where certain people dressed in certain ways, we become afraid of because of what certain people did of their culture. And sometimes we don't even get the right culture that we pinpoint. And so in other words, there's a lot in our world that shows this world is different, it is divided, and we often emphasize those differences, and culture is one of those things that does it. But here's the question: where did all of this begin? How did all these differences get started and develop? And the answer to that question is Genesis 11, the Tower of Babel. Turn with me there if you would. And let's begin reading about this very, very significant event that sometimes I think we may not ponder enough, we may not meditate enough about the impact that this story has had in our world. In Genesis 11, verse 1. Now the whole earth used the same language and the same words. And it came about as they journeyed east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar. And they settled there. And there they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they used brick for stone and they used tar for mortar. And they said, come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach into heaven. And let us make for ourselves a name, otherwise we'll be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. The Lord came down to see the city and the tower, which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they all have the same language. And this is what they began to do. And now nothing in which they purpose to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so that they will not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. And therefore its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole earth. And from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth. Now one of the things as I read this that kind of jogs my memory, I find of interest, is here is a group of God's people deciding to build or to bake bricks and to use those bricks to build a city and a tower. Well, that's going to happen again, but it's not going to be on their will. It's going to be forced upon them by a nation, by a different culture than theirs, in which they're going to have to make bricks, and they're going to have to build, using these bricks, to build cities and towers and magnificent things of a country that we come to be known as Egypt. And of course, what I'm talking about is the enslavement of Israel. Some things I want to point out of this story. In verse 1, the whole earth used the same language, the same words. In other words, they were united. But as God looked at how they used this unity, The reason he did what he did was because he didn't like the way that they used their unity. They did not use that unity for the glory of God, but to make a name for themselves, to exalt themselves. I find it interesting in verse 4, where the very thing that they worried about, the very motivation for building the city and the tower, that lest they be scattered abroad the face of the earth, becomes the very thing that happens because they build the city and the tower, is what God does to punish them for their misuse of working against God in unity. And so in verse 7, 8, and 9, God does two things. Number one, He confuses their languages. And number two, He scattered them upon the face of the earth. In other words, He divided them. And then we keep reading. You know, it's kind of interesting. The Tower of Babel is the first narrative story after Noah and the flood. It's the first story that's told. And then, in the midst of chapter 11, we get this family tree that takes us from Noah and the flood, from Shem, all the way down to our next character, Abraham. And I want you to think about Abraham for a second. You see, brothers and sisters in Christ, the Tower of Babel takes place in the middle of that genealogy. In fact, it takes place in the middle of chapter 10. Chapter 10, what we often call the table name. Where did all these nations come from? And why are they here and there? Well, the Tower of Babel comes from that very, or in the midst of that story. Chapter 10, verse 10, describing a man by the name of Nimrod. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, the very city that comes to be known for the city that was built in Genesis chapter 11. Look, if you would, at chapter 10. And in verse 24 and 25, a man, a descendant of Shem, by the name of Eber. Not Uber, but Eber. And in verse 25, two sons were born to Eber. The name of the one was Peleg. And look at this. For in his days the earth was divided. So in the midst of Genesis chapter 10, the table of nations, men are divided. The Tower of Babel occurs. And so what happens? Well, a lot of times what we do is we go right into the story of Abraham and we just keep going on. But I want us to go back to the Tower of Babel. I want you to think what happened after that. Weeks, months, years after that. Well, two immediate divisions occur, which we already talked about. Number one, they divided based on language. Now, I want you to think about that. Imagine we're all here, we're all speaking English, we all understand one another, and all of a sudden, boom, confusion. I can only understand my family, the princes, Diana, and everyone else. I can't understand what you're saying. Imagine how scary that would be. And so you're seeking out people that you can understand. All of a sudden, these people, you don't know what's happened. But you feel very divided. Secondly, he scatters them, and so they're divided based on land. And that's exactly what Genesis chapter 10 describes, this table of nations, where all of these different nations and people go, forming themselves probably first in towns, and then cities, and then in a whole population of a nation. And so they were divided. And those are the things that happened immediately after the Tower of Babel that divided the people. But there were also two what I call gradual divisions that continue this idea of difference and division. Number one, thanks to genetics. And I want to say Darwin was not completely wrong. Because we do, as God has created us, have the ability within the genetic code to what? To adapt to our environment. To change. And so as they're scattered about and this nation takes this land and this nation takes that land, some start to become darker in skin. Others become whiter in skin. Some become taller, bigger in stature. Others smaller in stature. And so they start to be divided gradually by appearance, more so than ever before. And then, finally, they are divided based on culture. As these people come together united in language, and as they come to occupy a certain territory of land, as they start to become a family, a nation of people, they create what we come to know as culture. They develop their own dances, celebrations, foods, rituals, and customs. They develop their own games and sports and contests. And I kind of love that in our own nation, we like to say we embrace these other cultures. In a way, I think we do. But we celebrate other cultures, their celebrations, right? We celebrate St. Patrick's Day. We the Irish culture, we embrace it. No, we don't. It's just an excuse for Americans to go out and to celebrate like Americans like to celebrate. They don't celebrate like the Irish. Cinco de Mayo. We celebrate Cinco de Mayo. No, we celebrate like we want to. They develop their own games, sports, and contests. We say football. In the rest of the world, that's soccer. And it's a big part of their culture. That's the difference of our culture. That's what it was all created as time goes on. That's why we have people that dress differently. And they have different music, that old music we often call folk music. Romania has folk music. It's the worst thing in the world, I'm telling you. I can't listen to that stuff. It's terrible. But people say, well, that's not your culture. That's right. But there's one thing I want you to understand first and foremost about all of this culture that was created. That these are all 100% man-made. God didn't tell them to create this dance or to create this cultural dish. Or this game and this contest or this celebration. Man did that as a result of these divisions that come from the Tower of Babel. But you know what? When we talk about culture, there's a lot of Phariseeism with culture. People emphasize and command that people hold to the culture and the traditions as if it came from God. And people act like it does. But you know what? As these nations formed their own culture, what else they did? They developed their own religion. Now we may not get quite the same impact because we have this freedom of religion and we have all sorts of religions. But most countries have what we might know as a national religion, where they actually think that the people of that nation are born into that religion. But the thing, as these religions are developed, they are developed, most of them develop a worldly religion. I want you to think about Abraham. Abraham went to the land of Canaan and he stuck out like a sore thumb. He was different. And in the very next story we have after the Tower of Abraham is what? You'll notice. He's not like the Canaanites. The Canaanites have their own towns and cities and kings and their own culture and their own gods. And he is different. And so as you look at these nations and you look at their culture, they are different. And we just make that distinction. But here's the thing. In a sense, as you look at them, they really all are the same. In Ephesians chapter, or Acts chapter 19, there is this riot that forms about a temple. A temple was magnificent in those days, considered to be one of the seven wonders of the world. And some of your translations will say that this riot went out into the theater and people started shouting, "Great is Diana!" And other translations say that people were yelling out, "Great is Artemis!" Well, what's the difference? Well, it's the same goddess, but one is the Greek term for that goddess, one is the Roman term for that goddess, and so they are different, but they're really the same. In other words, all of these cultures are man-made. All of these religions that they have formed go against God. And someone might say, well, in the Tower of Babel, God scattered them. God's the one that did all this. God should have known this was going to happen. That wasn't God's purpose. He still allowed them to have free will, but I want to say this, God had a plan. God decides to create His own nation. God says, I'm going to create my own nation. And where does that all start? It starts with Abraham. The very next story after the Tower of Babel, Abraham. And the promises that he's going to make a nation of Abraham. And he's going to give him a land to his descendants, to this nation. And so as all these nations and all these cultures form different but the same, God says, I'm going to create my own nation. I'm going to create my own culture. But the big difference is this was going to be different. It was going to be a God-created, God-ordained culture. And that's what He starts doing with Abraham. Look at Exodus 19, verse 5 and 6. This first generation that he, first generation he comes and he takes them to Mount Sinai. And what happens in Exodus 20? He gives them a covenant. He gives them the law. It starts with the Ten Commandments and then the rest of the law that follows. But the day before the Ten Commandments, the day before he meets Moses on Mount Sinai, he says this in Exodus 19, verse 5 and 6. Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. You're going to be my holy nation. You're going to be my religion. Now, we know that first generation didn't go so well. They didn't want to be God's nation. They didn't want to be different. And so God, 40 years later, brings the second generation. And in Deuteronomy 26, verse 18, 19, about 40 years after that, reminds this new generation of Israel, and the Lord has today declared to you to be His people. A treasured possession, as He promised you, and that you should keep all of His commandments, and that He shall set you high above all nations which He has made, for praise, fame, and honor, that you shall be what? A consecrated people to the Lord your God as He has spoken. God says, I'm going to create my own nation, my own culture. So how does He do it? He makes a covenant with them and He gives them a law. I want you to think about this. They were different. All the other nations had a king. They had no king but God. Can you imagine? How are these people flourishing? There's no king. Just God. They worship not many gods. Different but the same, right? All these other cultures, they all worship multiple gods. But here comes Israel, God's nation. They worship one God. They were what? Not a people that stepped on one another. They were a moral people. Not only loved God with all their heart, soul, and mind, but loved their neighbor as themselves. And here was a big sign to the nations. They were smaller, but stronger. How can these people, this nation that's so small, keep winning victory after victory? You see, brothers and sisters in Christ, as all these nations and cultures are created, God takes His holy nation and He says, I want you to show the world what this nation is going to be like. A nation that serves one God. A nation that one God, the God that created this world, blesses them. And that's what God's idea was. That's what God always wanted. God created His own culture. And it was different. And that was the whole point. I want you to think about this law that God gave in the law of Moses. What was it? Well, part of the law of Moses is a civil law. It tells you about, this is what God says is a crime, and here's the punishment for the crime. But it also had religious, what some call ceremonial law, that when you commit that crime, when you commit that sin, here's how you make it right with your God. Here's the sacrifice. And then there were religious celebrations. The Passover, Pentecost. God created His own culture. And then also in that law was a moral law. Don't covet your neighbor's wife or your neighbor's possessions. Honor your father and your mother. Don't steal. Don't worship idols. It was all in one. And it was to make that nation of people not just to be holy, not just to be religious, but to be God's holy nation. And to show the world how blessed a nation could be that worships the one true God. So let me ask you, as you go through the history of Israel, what's Israel's biggest challenge? What's their biggest failure? When they want to be like all other nations. Every time they do that, they fail. It does not go well for them. When they stop trusting God and start wanting to be like other nations, wanting to worship their gods, wanting to have a king like all the other nations, it does not go well. And yet God continues to work through Israel, His nation, even in the sinful periods. Why? You know the answer. Because this physical nation, Israel, wasn't really what He was after. They were the nation that was going to usher in the true what? Spiritual nation. Spiritual Israel. That's what we are today. That's what we are to be. We are to be God's culture. You see, brothers and sisters, man's culture divides. It shows how different we are. And most often, we want to think we're better than this culture. Man's culture, what? It creates pride. It creates peer pressure. And so, when you're teaching someone that's ingrained in their national culture, and you're teaching them the gospel, and they want to become a Christian, and their family finds out about it, it's not just, hey, you're changing churches. It's you're turning your back on your people. You're turning your back on your family, your culture, your people. And that's a reality for a lot of people in this world who want to turn to Christ. It's not just, hey, I'm going to stop this church and go to this church. It's this peer pressure put on them. We're different from that. You need to be with us. That's what man's culture creates. But God's culture, what? It unites. And it humbles. You wonder why there's so much about humility in the New Testament? Because that's key. That's what makes us different. The rest of the culture, the rest of the world emphasizes pride. We are to be different. God created a culture that would unite and humble. And one of the neat things is God used that one nation and He set that up to let the other nations see it. But then Jesus Christ came and He shed His blood. And He came from that one nation. But the whole reality, the whole desire was now through that one nation, through that Savior, all nations are called to become that one nation. To become that spiritual Israel. To be the church. Still, to show the other nations what the one looks like that is serving God, that is blessed by God, that has accepted God's culture. He started that with one nation. And now today He's calling all nations, all cultures to that one nation. Look at 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9 and 10. Tell me this doesn't sound like Exodus 19. But you are a chosen race. This is said to Christians. You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. For you once were not a people, but now you are the people of God. You had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. What are Christians? They're not just a bunch of people living out in the world that once in a while get together. They are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. They are God's own people. And if that doesn't mean anything to you, I can't make it mean anything to you. If that doesn't strike at your heart, I can't make it strike at your heart. What a powerful blessing. What a powerful calling. That's out there for you. In Hebrews chapter 8, verse 10 and 11, for this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days. Not physical Israel, but spiritual Israel. Says the Lord, I will put my laws into their minds, and I will write them upon their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people, and they shall not teach everyone his fellow citizen and everyone his brother, saying, know the Lord. For all shall know me, from the least to the greatest of them. I think everyone in the world knows about God and Jesus Christ. They simply have chosen to stick to their own culture, their own religion. And some people say, well, there's nations that are atheists. That's a religion. Don't let anyone deceive you. That's a religion. And so, I want to close now. But I want to close by looking at some powerful passages and a powerful point. Could you give me just a few more minutes? And let's bring this to all fruition. Because there were others that have gone on before us that live like us as strangers and aliens, and they show us why they were willing to do that. Why they left their own family, their own culture, to stick out like a sore thumb to the rest of the world. For example, the Hebrew author in Hebrews 11, verse 8 through 10, says, by faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place he was to receive for inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith he lived, what? As an alien in the land of promise. As in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. Why was he willing to do that? For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And Abraham knew that city isn't found somewhere on this planet. It's eternal. It's supernatural. It's beyond this world. He was willing to be so different than everyone else because he understood what it was to be in God's culture. And he was looking to be part of God's nation and God's city. In Hebrews 11, 13 through 16, all these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth, for those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking about that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. And therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. If they wanted to, they could have gone back home, back to their own culture. But they confessed they were God's people. And they were looking for God's better country, a heavenly one. Or Hebrews 11, 24 through 26, by faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Moses could have had an easy life with the culture of Egypt in the palace of the king. He could walk for nothing. But instead, he chose to be part of God's people. Chose to endure ill treatment. To wander in the wilderness. To have God's own people complain day after day about Him and His leadership. Why would He be willing to do that? Because He was looking to the reward of those who are part of God's nation and God's culture. God's culture. And you might be here this morning, you might be saying, well, that's great. I'm not in the culture. I'm ready to be part of God's nation, God's holy nation. I'm ready to be a priest for Him. I'm ready to be part of God's culture. Let me stop you right there. Let me tell you what it's going to take. If you want to be part of God's culture, you've got to give up your own culture. Your fleshly, physical, national culture. Someone said, well, wait a second. I mean, I can't, you know, celebrate some of these things or eat some of these foods. And well, I think there are some things about culture that there's nothing that stands in our way of Christ. They're not evil in themselves. There are some things about culture that perhaps we could still keep. But in saying that, I want us to be cautious. Because I think there are Christians that are too much holding on to that national culture. Where it takes time away from God and His people. Because I got to be at this cultural function. Or my culture tells me this is important. And so sometimes that comes ahead of God. And I'm not saying it's one culture over another. It can be American culture. It can be Mexican culture. It can be Asian culture. It can be European, whatever. I'm not looking at anyone this morning. I think from all those cultures there are Christians
if I can put it this way, for our uncle, there are two American and not enough Christian. I think it would be a terrible, terrible thing. Not of no profit at all to let your national fleshly culture keep you from being 100% completely devoted to God and His culture. And having said that, if you're ready to leave your culture, if you're ready to stand that peer pressure and to become a Christian, accepting God's culture to be a royal priest for Him, then won't you come this morning as together we stand and as we sing. I am resolved.